Welcome, friends. This is episode 9 of Earworm Audio Theater, brought to you by Zach and Elizabeth. We have taken some time off recently, a short intermission is what we called it, and that was due to the current social climate and the important work being done by activists around our country to draw attention to racial inequality and police violence against POC and Indigenous people. We want to return to the podcast with the same idea of providing a new outlet of theater, but still show our support and provide focus to topics that deserve it. This week, we decided to use a piece with more of a focus on comedy to hopefully provide some comfort and lightness to our world. It is by Hyten Davidson and Christian Misenak, and is called Banana Bread is a Myth. This piece features two characters named Albert and Donkey, two monkeys participating in a psychological experiment. For today's piece, Elizabeth and I will be playing our identified genders. This setting for this piece is the room or cage where the characters are participating in the experiment, which includes answering questions by typing the correct answers. We hope you enjoy the play. After we finish the read-through, we are going to be looking at who our two playwrights are, and then we will open the floor for our discussion. Let the metaphorical curtain lift.
Big pile of bananas you got there.
Thank you.
Can I ask why you don't just eat them?
I eat some of them.
I haven't seen you eat one once.
I have a system.
What system?
Look, I don't want to talk to you about my system, okay? I don't know you, and it's a private system.
Okay, geez. Never mind. You don't have to throw your poop at me about it. Can I have one?
No. They're mine. If you want one, you need to earn it, just like I do.
But you have so many. You wouldn't even notice it.
That's not the point.
They're just gonna rot over there.
They'll be fine.
They're going to rot, and then they'll be no good to anyone, except to make banana bread.
You know, banana bread is a myth.
I've had it.
You've had it?
I have. So, listen. I'm just gonna go over there by the big pile of bananas for a second. But it's not related to the bananas. I'm going over there for a different reason. Hi, Gar. But what's your name?
Albert.
Hey, Albert. Have you ever written a manifesto before? Well, I have. I've written a lot. You know how many?
Please stop distracting me from my work.
12. 12 manifestos, each very different than the last. And I know what you're thinking, Albert. You're thinking, that's a lot of manifestos. Maybe you should cool it with the manifestos. But I disagree. You know why? Because I've got a lot of different ideas about how the world should go. And they're all very distinct. And you have to write these things down. Otherwise, you might forget.
You're new here. And I don't mean to be rude, but I'm trying to concentrate.
On what?
What do you mean? On what? You know on what.
Oh, the test thing, right.
Yes, the test thing. Is that not what you're working on over there?
No. I told you, I'm working on my manifesto.
What on earth are you talking about?
Ugh, come look. They don't know what we're talking about. You're fine.
Where are you from again?
Bronx. You?
San Diego.
Ooh, fancy. Albert's fancy.
Can I ask you how you got chosen for this program?
I don't know. I don't tend to get included on those kinds of discussions.
It's just, you know, my understanding is that this is sort of a best and the brightest kind of situation.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I've been here 10 months, and I've seen a lot of folks come through those doors. They all seemed smart, they all worked hard, and all of them washed out but me.
If only they had a secret banana system.
So you can understand why it's a surprise to find you here and instead write 507 pages of nonsense, and it looks like you can't even spell the word monkey.
Where did I misspell monkey?
In the title. Humans are stupid and I want to rip off their skin, semicolon, a daring, thought-provoking manifesto by Donkey. With a D.
Right.
You're a monkey with an M.
Uh-huh.
Oh, monkeys and donkeys are different. Monkeys look like us. Donkeys look like gross horses.
Ugh, my name. is donkey. I am a monkey.
Your name is Donkey? You're Donkey the Monkey?
I happen to be named after a famous revolutionary monkey who once overthrew her own captors and conquered a nation in the name of all monkey kind.
Really?
Yes, really. Her name was Donkey Kong, and she was from Japan in the 80s.
Wow.
She wore a necktie because she was all business.
Okay, and you're honestly looking to overthrow the humans. That's really what you want to do.
Sure. What else should I be doing? Be tested for visuospatial learning, spatial working memory, discrimination learning and retention, and skilled motor performances?
Well, I mean, yeah. That's what I'm doing. It's a wonderful opportunity that I don't think you're appreciating. You know, we were chosen for this because we've proven we're special.
But so what? All that means is you have to answer stupid little questions on a computer all day.
Yeah, but in return they give you fruit, donkey. They just give it to you.
Yeah, but you're not eating the fruit.
Of course I'm not eating the fruit. I eat a very little bit each day and the rest of it I save.
Okay, but again, eventually it has to rot.
Okay, sure, yeah, it does. And then they come in and throw it away. But by that time I've earned a bunch more bananas, so, you know, who cares?
Yeah, you're better off not explaining that system to people because it sounds pretty dumb.
Look, I've seen how this goes, okay? One day I might have to go back to San Diego like the other burnouts and all this goes away.
What? You think they're going to just let you take the fruit with you?
Sure, they're reasonable people. I'm sure they'll box them up and I'd get them at the zoo in 3 to 5 business days.
Oh, Albert.
You don't really think that they'd fire me and not even let me keep my bananas, do you?
What does it even matter? Was there some sort of fruit shortage at the San Diego Zoo or something?
No.
So why do you need these bananas? Why is this situation any better?
I don't know. This is what they've asked us to do, and they say it's because I'm special and I get rewarded for it, and I don't know. They tell you to do something and you do it. At the zoo, I was nobody. I was just another monkey, and I wasn't even the cool monkey. Bongo was the cool monkey.
Sure, okay. Maybe a life at the zoo is less special, but at least you were free.
No, I wasn't. I lived in a zoo.
Okay, fair. But freer, at least. You got to move around. You got to be outside. You got to be a monkey. I'm just saying, we're not getting anything out of this. I don't know what the point of these tests are, and they don't bother explaining it to us because they just think we're stupid monkeys who don't matter. That's why I write my manifestos whenever I can. You want a banana?
Yeah.
Then go get a banana!
So you think the manifesto will really work?
Do I think I'll overthrow the humans like Her Royal Majesty Princess Donkey Kong? No. But I think if I don't play their game, they'll send me back. And I actually miss the Bronx. I have a mate, I've got kids, I got a rock that I like to sit on.
You know, I don't know if I have it in me to write a manifesto.
Then write something else. Don't have to be a manifesto. Isn't there anything you've ever wanted to write? Other than answers to stupid questions?
Well,
there is something, isn't there? What is it?
I did have an idea once, you know, for a story or like a play, maybe. I don't know. It's about these two families.
No. Don't just tell me. Write it down.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I'll do it. Two households, both alike in dignity. In fair Verona, where we lay our scene. Alrighty, so that was Banana Bread is a Myth by Hyten Davidson and Christian Misenak. We are now moving into the research and discussion portions. They are the first playwrights we are featuring on Earworm since our intermission, and in lieu of research, I'll be reading each of their bios they sent to us, alongside information of their online presence. We'll start with Hyten. Hyten Davidson is an actress and writer based in the Chicago area. Her short plays have been produced all over Chicago, Evanston, and New York City. She's also an award-winning screenwriter, having won the Shortcut 100 International Film Festival Best Screenplay Award, the South Shore Film Festival Best Screenplay Award, the TSWY International Film Festival Script Competition, among other accolades. For more information, visit HytonDavidson.com.
Jeez, okay. Go off.
And now for Christian. Christian Misenak is a Chicago-based playwright and graduate of Columbia College and the Second City Conservatory. The world premiere of his full-length play Sheridan premieres at Mad Lab Theater in Columbus, Ohio in 2021, and his short play Nowhere to Go Nights will be published in the upcoming issue of The High Plains Register this November. For more information, visit ChristianMisenak.com.
Dang, okay.
Right. So this concludes our research portion for today.
Well, and the coolest part about this is they're actually a power couple. So not only individually are they beyond impressive, they're actually engaged, right, which I think is super cool.
Right.
And the play that we're actually, that we read today is the first time they collaborated on a piece.
Right.
So that was really cool for us, this being our first collaborative project.
And also being engaged and everything.
That's that's cool. I forgot, my bad, but...
That's okay. Maybe not anymore. But
but yeah, so it's really cool to see them team up and having produced this piece.
Yeah, no, that it's amazing.
All right, now we're going to move into our discussion. So the very first thing that I wanted to bring to the table is the similarity between the piece that we did today and a play by David Ives called Words, Words, Words.
Yes.
So the cool thing about that play specifically by Ives is I actually did it in high school theater. Shout out to DeLand High School. Please fund the arts programs. but it's a play about three chimpanzees named Kafka, Milton, and Swift, and they're also participating in a psychological typing experiment. The figurative doctor, Dr. Rosenbaum, is testing a hypothesis that three apes typing random strings of letters and sentences for an infinite amount of time will surely produce Hamlet by Shakespeare.
Right.
So that's the whole setting of the play, is that these three chimpanzees are supposed to just be typing the entire time and having a discussion and interacting and things like that. So it was really cool to read this piece for the first time when it was first submitted, and I was actually the first one of us, out of the two of us, to read it, and I was like, oh my god, I hope he likes it, because the first thing that came to my head was words from high school, and having done that with three people that we were in high school theater with who were just amazing people, and it was such a fun experience,
right.
And so I really wanted to do it, because the funny thing is this play is not based on the play by Ives.
Right.
But it's based on either the same or a similar experiment that's right. actually been done. So
right.
I was like, oh, we have to do it. So it's really cool. And one of the similarities between Ives's play and this play is that the characters are opposites. And you have
right.
that clash of personalities. And you have the person who just wants to do the job they're there to do. And you have the person who's all over the place. And then in Ives, you have the mediator. So it was really interesting to see the lack of that common ground character
right.
and just see the two people going, basically, I would say butting heads in like a non-aggressive way, just butting like ideas and seeing how that plays out. So I think that's the first very interesting point about
this
piece.
Well, and I feel like with the lack of the mediator, I mean, lack is, it has a negative connotation, but it's weird
yeah.
because I feel like with that lack of the mediator, you get to the point of each argument a lot quicker and
yeah.
a lot more, you know, simply laid out.
No, I definitely appreciate just having the two characters in
no,
this
absolutely.
Piece. And I definitely like the way that they were presented a little. I would say in this piece, it's a little bit more approachable, you know? The characters in Ives's piece, Kafka, Milton, and Swift, are modeled after those authors, mm-hmm. and so they do have similar personalities. But in this story, you get original characters mm-hmm. with original personalities. Right. And I think if you had done the exact same format with a third person, it wouldn't have worked so successfully. Right. I definitely think that the way that this story was told was the most successful way to do it. So I definitely appreciate that about it. Heighton and Christian, they had told us that they wrote this piece based on an article that they had read about how monkeys in a lab setting actually outperform humans on a problem-solving computer test.
That checks out.
I definitely think we can sit back and say, like, I'm smarter than a monkey, but
there are some really smart monkeys.
Well, there's a wide range of human intelligence, and there's a wide range of primate intelligence. But monkeys are definitely reward-oriented, mm-hmm. and so are humans to an extent, but we're not happy with a piece of fruit. You know, we definitely want more complex rewards or some sort of experience to be the end result. Where monkeys, well, can give them fruit and they're good to go.
And I don't know if I'm just reading too much into it, but, like, you know, I tend to do that. But I also feel like the bananas in this are money to us.
Oh, just hoarding wealth.
Just hoarding wealth. I got serious Jeff Bezos vibes from Albert at some point.
Jeff Bezos, come on, my dude. Just saying, we could end a lot of global problems and you would still be stupid rich.
That's exactly what Donkey is saying.
Yeah, like the idea of waste, and I need to have them because I need to have them, not because they serve a purpose.
And, you know, like, you're not going to have money when you die. You're not going to have money or the bananas when you head back to San Diego. You really mm-hmm. think they're going to box them up and send them to you, you know?
Mm-hmm. No. So. I never thought about that, so that's a really interesting point that I'm glad you brought up.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Speaking of Donkey.
Yes.
I love her character. I might be partial because I got to be her, but I love her character. I love everything about her, but mostly I love her name. When we first started reading this, I said, okay, because we did a test read together. I said, okay, you're Albert, and I'm Donkey. And he goes, Donkey?
I said, who?
And I said, I know, Donkey. Because I was just like, yep, that's the name, I guess. Let's go through it.
But then we got to the Her Majesty Princess Donkey Kong.
I love it. I love taking the story of Donkey Kong and making it folkloric and making it like
a legend.
Yes, I absolutely love that.
She was all business.
She wore tech because she was all business. I'm living for it. I love it. I do want to point out, because I'm a little bit of a butthole, Donkey Kong was an ape, not a monkey. God. But I still love it. I still think it applies.
This is the third time I've heard this today, just so y'all know.
Because Donkey Kong, I think we can assume that she would fight for all primates. You know, I don't think we have to
Are we really delving into the revolutionary politics of Donkey Kong?
Well, it's there to be looked at, but I'm just saying.
You know, if you really dig underneath the surface, you can find some really...
If you go down to that next level. But I love it. I love how the playwrights used that, you know, because it was just that little added touch of, you know, that little whipped cream of comedy on top of what's already funny.
It was a nice touch.
I definitely liked it. I was really sad, still talking about Donkey, I was really sad that she was separated from her family. You know, she said that she had a mate and she had kids. She had her beloved Sitting Rock. You know, I definitely, like, felt for her in that moment. And I think it was important to have that moment because we chose this piece because we read it, we loved it, but we also thought that this week we needed to do this piece because we haven't... in our past, we haven't done a lot of comedy.
Yeah,
you know?
our first season here has been pretty dark at some point.
Pretty intense, yeah. You know. But I definitely think we wanted to not only do comedy, but we wanted to have a piece of comedy in this moment. Returning from our intermission, we definitely wanted to have something that we could just enjoy doing, enjoy listening to.
Yeah.
So I think it was important to have that moment of Because we can identify, you know, I mean, primates are very similar to humans in a lot of different ways, but this play, you definitely get to sit back and watch, like, how they, as a quote-unquote they group, would interact in this scenario, but you get to feel her in this moment of, oh, she has a mate, she has a partner, she has children, you know, she has a home, and she's missing that. We don't see that emotion with Albert. Albert is just living in the moment and loving...
And hoarding bananas.
Hoarding bananas, loving the recognition because Bongo isn't there
Don't get me started on Bongo.
I definitely like that almost humanizing moment where you're expected to sit and think like, oh my God, she has been just yanked out of her home, shipped to wherever this research facility is, and just handed equipment and expected to do stuff. And it's like, you can't just do that to a conscious, like, being, but that's what's happened to her.
Well, and I mean, you said that you don't see it so much with Albert, but I think we do in a different sense. Mm-hmm. Like, Albert doesn't have, I mean, he has Bongo at his zoo. You know, he doesn't want to go back.
Yeah.
But it's also, you get to see his realization of, like, he's not seeing the world as it is. He's a tool for people right now. And his hoarding of bananas won't be coming with him back to San Diego and everything. And you get to see that realization of, okay, I'm willfully staying ignorant of the world as it is outside of this place. You know, I am here to do my job and then I get a reward and that's enough for me.
Mm-hmm. Poor Albert is actually having like a mini existential crisis by the end of this piece.
Well, right. And I mean, and you also get to see his, he said that he's seen so many people burn out. Monkeys burn out.
Individuals.
Yeah, over the months, he's the only one that's last.
Well, and how has that affected him? Because we could even, I mean, if we wanted to take these steps towards assumptions, we could say maybe he wasn't the only monkey from his zoo come here.
Maybe Bongo was there with him.
Oh, screw Bongo. But I just have a feeling me and Bongo would not get along.
No, definitely not. Bongo is a showman I do not want to be involved with.
But we can make an assumption. Maybe someone from his zoo came with him. Maybe not. Maybe he got here and he bonded with the other monkeys that were already here and they have left him. And I think it's important that he used the word burnt out because it wasn't a voluntary, I don't want to be here anymore. It wasn't what Donkey's doing where she's purposefully not following the rules in the hopes that they send her home. They followed the rules. They played the game and they couldn't take it anymore, you know? So you have to think that this might be emotionally or intellectually taxing. So what state did these other monkeys leave the experiment in? And he's had to watch that. He's had to watch people come in and out of his environment, do what he's doing. They couldn't hack it. They suffered because of it, but he's still there. He's still doing it. So what kind of impact is that going to have on him? So I definitely, like you said, I feel for Albert in a different way.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard when he has that, like, I won't get to take my bananas with me. Of course not.
Well, yeah, that whole...
They're decent people.
You don't really think they do that, right? Right? You
know. Yeah. Poor Albert. I do think it's funny, going back to the mirroring with David Ives' words, 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 is that he ends up writing, or starting to write, Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
At the end of the play. I'd be interested to see if it was identical, like the original experiment, the infinite monkey theorem, how they theorized that monkeys would type it word for word, or if Albert would put, like, some primate undertones into it. You know?
I hate that you just said that.
What?
Primate undertones.
You know.
Next topic.
I just think it'd be interesting. So.
That's just so absurd. I'm sorry.
How do you think the researchers would react? Because on one hand, we have Donkey typing her 500 and something page 12th manifesto.
Yeah, this is her 12th. This may not even be her longest. You know?
Exactly. So you have that. We can assume it's in some way legible because Albert reads it back to her.
And he even says that you spelled this word wrong.
Exactly. So how do you think the researchers would react that you have one monkey who's not following directions and has this huge, like, anti-human manifesto in one hand, and then you have this other monkey who's been diligently working for months and then all of a sudden starts typing Romeo and Juliet from either memory or he's just making it up and it's identical.
It's not memory. He said that he,
Well, how would they assume, you know? Be like, right. Has this monkey been exposed to Shakespeare, you know? So how do you think the researchers would react?
That is a very good question. I mean, I think, you know, we get the vibe from Albert, at least, because he said this is a best and brightest kind of situation, you know? And it's sort of implying that Donkey does not have the intelligence that he has.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, she's written 12 manifestos, and he's done exactly what he was told.
Mm-hmm. So the creativity is with her.
Exactly. And I think that would probably be far more interesting to the researchers than whatever Albert's doing. He's just doing what he's told. She's doing her own thing. 500 and however many pages, you know?
Yeah. And Donkey does list off, like, what they are testing, the visuospatial working memory and things like that. So they're obviously not working the infinite monkey theorem. So if one of them was familiar with that idea, maybe they'd be more excited by Albert. But I 100% would be more invested on this monkey who is writing a manifesto against humans based on Donkey Kong. You know, I'd be like, who are you? What is happening? You know, like, has she ever displayed this behavior at her other zoo?
What are they feeding the monkeys at the Bronx?
What writing materials has she had access to, you know? So I definitely think it would be a huge what the H moment, you know?
what the H?
Leave me alone. But I think it's interesting. What do you think might have happened after our play ended? You know, we leave off with Albert writing Romeo and Juliet. What do you think are the next steps for our characters?
I mean, I think these two, it's sad to say, because you know how badly both of them want to leave now at the end. But I think that the result of the end is they stay there for a much longer time. Realistically, you know, he's writing Shakespeare. She's writing her umpteenth manifesto.
They might just let him go off, see what happens.
Exactly, you know?
Yeah. I would like to think that Donkey gets to go back to her zoo, but...
Well, I mean, if she did just get there recently, then if they decide to keep her longer than the other quote-unquote burnouts, then, you know, who's to say that her family doesn't come, you know? Because if she's displaying elevated intelligence and creativity, then... Mm-hmm. Maybe that's in her genes. Maybe they'll want to bring her kids.
Or they'll look at the other monkeys in her enclosure. See, like, is this a pattern of them being raised in this Bronx habitat, you know?
Right.
Is because the Bronx Zoo, I think we can assume, is very different than the San Diego Zoo. You know, I don't know a lot about the Bronx Zoo, I'll admit. But I do know the San Diego Zoo. You know, I've never been there. But I have heard that they try really hard to do a very natural looking and feeling environment for all of their animals. So, assuming that their enclosures are vastly different, you know, they're both high traffic zoos, but different, base demographics of people.
Right.
So you never know what they would be exposed to.
You're a fancy monkey.
Fancy. But, I think it would be interesting. I'd like to think she went back to her family or they came to her, but I don't think that's a logical assumption we can make.
Right.
I think they would definitely, if they look at what she's writing you, because we can also say, well, if she's not answering the questions, they might not care what she's doing because she's not adding to their data pool.
Right.
So they might never look at what she is doing because she's not progressing through the tests. So they might send her back immediately, but it just depends on a lot of different little variables. I think Albert would definitely be there for a long time because I can just see him starting to write his Romeo and Juliet. And then prioritizing and saying, well, this morning I'll write this, but this afternoon I'll try to get more of the test done. You know, that just seems like his personality to not, to let go a little bit, but to still keep a tight hold on why he's there.
Oh, see, I got the opposite vibe. I thought he would be throwing himself into writing what he wants to write with the expectation that he's not going to be there much longer.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't think about it from that way. So it would be, I'd be interested to see, like, where our two little monkeys are, but hopefully back home, but I guess we'll see. And then the last thing I just wanted to say is about psychological testing. You know, this is kind of my wheelhouse. This is what my degree is in. I very much enjoyed that aspect of it. There is a lot of history of using primates in psychological testing and doing things like this. One of the most famous is, of course, with Harry Harlow, and look at, like, maternal bonding and things like that. But primate testing in that era, in between the 40s and the 70s, you know, was very different to the way that primates may or may not be used right now. Thinking about when this play might be taking place could very much differentiate their experiences. You know, if this is happening at the same time Harlow's doing his experiments, they're kept in aluminum grated cages by themselves with enough food that they need. You know, they're isolated. They're not exposed to other monkeys. Their handlers only come in to take them from one cage to the testing site to back to their cage. You know, that would be one very harsh environment to be in. Nowadays, it's much, much different. There's a lot of rules and regulations. There's a lot you have to go through, like, in your ethical boards to try to get an experiment approved, especially when you're using vertebrates or primates. So I think we're probably looking at this time setting to be closer to where we are now, because they're in a room together. They're given as much food as they earn, you know. I think it's definitely going to be a little different, but I'd be interested in seeing, like, exactly when this would be taking place, because if it's taking place now, I'm not too worried about the monkeys. I think they're going to be well taken care of, you know, because they'll have a lot of protections. But the farther back you go, the less protections they have as individuals and as animals. So that's the last thing that I just wanted to talk about. So last thoughts, anything else about this piece?
No, I mean, you pretty much wrapped it up in a nice little bow there.
Well,
not going to lie.
But we definitely enjoyed reading this. It was something that we've been really excited about. We've had it planned, you know, when we took our intermission, we knew that this would probably be the first thing we did when we came back.
Right.
So it's definitely been, there's been a lot of anticipation, but we really enjoyed it. We really enjoyed the playwright's work, Hyten and Christian. Please go look at their websites, see what else they have out there. They're very accomplished individuals, both separate and as working as a team.
As a unit.
Definitely the power couple. but they're good people, and very kind-hearted people, I think, too. So definitely check out their work and see what else they have out there.
Yep.
Alrighty, y'all. Thanks for listening. That was our 9th episode, Banana Bread is a Myth, by Hyten Davidson and Christian Misenak. We want to take this moment today to direct our focus to some deserving groups and organizations. The piece today was focused on two monkeys participating in a form of animal testing. There are humane and regulated ways to have animals participate in psychological testing without causing harm, but there are a lot of companies that use animal testing resulting in harm to the animal. Many times the point of the testing is to measure the extent of that injury. We at Earworm do not believe that animal testing is necessary or a sustainable or acceptable practice. Here are some facts from DoSomething.org about animal testing. Over 100 million animals are burned, crippled, poisoned, and abused in U.S. labs every year. 92% of experimental drugs that are safe and effective in animals fail in human clinical trials because they are too dangerous or don't work. Labs that use mice, rats, birds, reptiles, and amphibians are exempted from the minimal protections under the Animal Welfare Act, or the AWA. Even animals that are protected under the AWA can be abused and tortured, and the law doesn't require the use of valid alternatives to animals, even if they are available. Several cosmetic tests commonly performed on mice, rats, rabbits, and guinea pigs include skin and eye irritation tests, where chemicals are rubbed on shaved skin or dripped into the eyes without any pain relief. There are available alternatives to animal testing practices. Companies are just not being required to look elsewhere. Please consider giving to or supporting organizations like the Animal Justice Project, Cruelty Free International, and the Primate Freedom Project. Something else we can all do is look into the products we buy and ensure the company does not use animal testing in the production process. Furthermore, we did take our intermission here at Earworm to give space to the current social movements going on in our community and nationwide. We want to take a moment to say that just because we made the decision to return to production does not mean that we think the movement is over or no longer important. The activism we see happening every day is the most important thing going on. History is being made, and it is important for all of us to be a part of it. Please consider giving to organizations that further equality for all people, participating in events like marches or gatherings, and educating those around you. Above all, be safe. Lastly, we are available almost anywhere podcasts are, so please share us with your friends and family, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. We want to be able to do much more on Earworm, so if you like what we do here, consider going to our page on Anchor and pressing that support button so we can keep bringing you thought-provoking theater. See you next time.